The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. Welcome to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. And today I am very excited to be joined by another Tanya, Tanya Teschke. Tanya has been in the Foreign Service community for actually over 20 years now as a Foreign Service family member and has been able to create a whole separate life as she moves from tour to tour. She's the author of The Bordeaux Kitchen, which is a wonderful, wonderful cookbook with amazing photographs and recipes. And that has spawned a whole other bunch of business ventures. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tanya. Thank you.
It's a little funny to be like, hi, Tanya, right? It's
yeah.
But you and I have been wanting to talk for a bit, actually. So tell us a little bit more about your story and how you got into food, wine, preparing wonderful meals, and this wonderful cookbook, The Bordeaux Kitchen.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. So, you know, we started in 2002 with in 2001, actually, but our first posting was to Paris in 2002.
Lucky you. Nice.
Yeah.
Work.
Yeah. That was
pretty unusual.
It was great. It was kind of like a wedding present. We got married right before and then took off for Paris, and we had our 2-year tour there. And we had actually studied there before. We studied at a business institute outside of Paris as grad students. And I had been there as a student in 91. So France has been kind of in my life for a long time. And I started learning French in sixth grade. So I've always kind of had it close to my heart. And so we did our tours to Paris and then Moscow, and we had our first daughter. And then from Moscow, we went to Japan and had our second daughter, to Tokyo. And we went back to Moscow. And from there, we went to Bordeaux. And before we went to Bordeaux, I started thinking about, wow, well, Bordeaux is all about wine. I should probably start learning. And anyway, when we got to Bordeaux, I took some kind of wine and cooking classes that you know, you can just take as a regular person.
As one does, right? When in Bordeaux. So.
Right. and of course, everyone there is in wine. I mean, you can't really meet people who, or you do meet people who are in wine so often there. And I wanted to be able to speak intelligently about wine. So eventually I took a University of Bordeaux wine diploma class in wine science and tasting in French. But before I started that, so in 2013, we got to Bordeaux and I was interested in learning more about cooking to better nourish my girls. You know, I was basically doing frozen salmon steaks and boneless, skinless chicken breast and giving them soy nuggets for lunch and that kind of horrible thing. So I was trying to up my game. And I really did. I learned a lot from a lot of friends. So many people in France know how to cook. And so I just started asking friends. I asked some of the chefs in the courses that I was taking to show me recipes. And because I'm a photographer, I also recorded everything kind of on my camera. And at that point, I was using digital, but I started on film a long time ago. But anyway, I collected all this material. I had all these recipes and, you know, portraits of my friends and the process of what they were doing. And I decided to put it into a book as opposed to just blogging about it, because to me, a blog is so ephemeral.
Exactly. Yeah. Every day. And then people are on to the next thing. The book is a more tangible thing that people can actually hold in their hands and feel the experience of it.
And I love books for that reason too.
Completely.
And I always wanted to make a book, but I never thought it would be a cookbook. So I just started putting it together. And right from the beginning, I knew it would be called The Bordeaux Kitchen. But it's called that just because my kitchen was in Bordeaux and that's where I started learning. But the book actually includes recipes from around France. And if you look at it from a wider perspective, really every culture has its traditions and its culinary traditions, especially that, you know, people more and more now want to, you know, savor and preserve. Like you see a lot of cookbooks coming out from Afghan, you know, Afghan cooking or all sorts of African or Asian style cooking. And they all, you know, they all have nutrient dense meals and recipes. And nutrient density is something I learned about while I was learning about food in France, because I was also researching, you know, this idea of ancestral health, like how we evolved, what we ate over the millennia. And I was trying to figure out why I didn't have so much energy. And so I was learning about food and health from that perspective as well, and kind of the I don't know what you call it, like the difference or the asynchronicity between the way we live our modern lives now and the way we traditionally lived. And in the past, before industrial foods, you know, and processed foods, people, our grandmothers, our great-great-great-grandmothers and forefathers, you know, they prepared food by hand. There weren't big industrial
machines and there wasn't this big industrial food complex that we have now.
And so I have this idea of this concept of using only farm fats in cooking. So farm by farm meaning like what you can do by hand. So you can squeeze the olive oil from the olives. You can churn the butter. You can you know, by hand, basically, and you can render fat. So in my recipes, I use only, or for the most part, animal fats, and including butter, sometimes, you know, coconut oil or others, but really animal fats. So lard, tallow, goose fat, and duck fat. Duck fat, especially in the Bordeaux region, is a very sought after, or it comes up in a lot of recipes because traditionally they raised a lot of, you know, ducks in the Southwest. And so duck fat is in all the recipes and it's delicious. You know, it's nutritious. And whereas, for example, something like canola oil or safflower or even sunflower oil are, you know, deodorized, processed, heated at high heats, and they're basically toxic in the bottle, in including usually in a plastic bottle, before you even open the bottle. And so I've learned a lot about nutrition from that perspective. And so I've been, you know, kind of feeding my family and talking about this way of eating. So since I started learning about it in France.
So can I ask you, Tanya, so you're overseas, you've gone on multiple tours at this point, you have two little girls, which as we know, raising children is, it's wild. It takes a lot of time and energy, and you're overseas, right? And you're in Bordeaux and you decide that you are going to do a book and not a blog, right? I don't know if everybody would necessarily have chosen the route to make a cookbook, right? Because I mean, and for those of you that check out Tanya's book, it is a beautiful hardcover book with these glorious pictures in there. I mean, this is a big work, right? Like Did you have any idea going into it how much time it would take, or did you think about that at all, or was it just kind of like a little idea and you just said, "Well, maybe I'll kind of do it on the side"? Like, what was that whole process of when you decided to do this?
Well, I guess I was doing pieces of it all the time. As soon as I got there, we met winemakers, and because I'm a photographer, I said, "Can I take pictures of you in doing the harvest in your vines?" And so people let me come into their vineyards and take photos, follow them around. I even followed one vineyard through the year. And so I just was very enthusiastic about learning. And then I was collecting all of this information, and I just didn't want it to go to waste. And like I said, I love books, and I just thought, well, I'm learning about this, cooking, all these recipes. I need to leave a legacy for my daughters. And I thought, well, you know, because I guess I could have found some sort of job and some way of, I can't remember there's like the bilateral agreements for employment that do exist or don't exist. Sure. And I was just like, ugh, you know, I'm more of a self-starter, and I don't like being under other people's timetables or doing other people's work. So that makes it a little difficult.
Yeah, you want to explore into your own things. Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense.
Yeah, so I just have all this creativity that has to get out. And so I tried to harness all of that by doing, you know, putting this all into the book. And what it did was it gave me a kind of a pass to when I would say, or like an opening, it would open doors, because I would say, "Hey, I'm doing this book. Would you, like to the butcher, for example, would you do a few recipes with me that I can put in my book? And I'll take pictures, you can have the pictures, and you'll be featured in my book eventually, someday." You know, I had to kind of describe what I had in mind.
The vision of what you had. Yes, before it was an actual thing.
Yes.
Tangible thing.
But I didn't know it would become this big. And actually, when I was in college and grad school, I didn't want to write long thesis papers because I didn't think I could. Yes. And so, you know, 650 pages later, I just included everything. And like I said before, I did a wine class for a year, and that was a great way to meet people who are now lifelong friends, because, you know, when you go through learning and suffering together, you bond with people, and that's what's happened. So they're like school, you know, classmates, still great friends.
That's wonderful, because, you know, I think so many people who, you know, are quote unquote married to the Foreign Service, they feel a little adrift because, you know, you are bouncing from place to place to place.
Yeah.
It sounds like for you, you really dug into the local culture, and obviously you chose tours that played to your strengths, right? Because you said that France has been kind of weaved through your history for many years, since even when you were in elementary school and learning French. But I think the Foreign Service does give spouses the opportunity to explore a number of creative pursuits, whereas otherwise, maybe in the States, you'd feel kind of pressured to get a regular job like everybody else and you know, kind of do what everybody else is doing. And you really chose that time to really let your creativity flow, the photography. And like, you went out and you talked to people in a local culture and really got into their kind of day to day with this beautiful vision and idea about, you know, what you wanted to produce. And people let you into their world. I mean, that's fantastic. I think that's a really great model for people that, you know, want to go over and experience cultures in a way that is really close to, I mean, what's more close to cultures than earth and food, right? And how it's produced.
It's a great way to get to know people, is share their food, share their recipes.
Completely.
And actually, I wherever I go, I ask people, whatever culture they're from, I ask them, you know, so did you, well, the main kind of thing that I'm focusing on now is organ meats, which is kind of a niche thing, and people are sort of squeamish about it, but it's the most nutrient dense, again, that concept, nutrient dense of all foods are things like liver and heart. And the French do that very well, but I ask, you know, even taxi drivers, so do you eat organ meats, and how do you prepare them? You know, how do you still eat that here in the US and that kind of thing.
I love it. They're like, this is the most interesting passenger I've had all day, because I'm sure they don't get that question very often.
they really light up when you ask them, when you ask anyone, right, about their culture, and then when you talk about food.
I mean, it's a great subject for most people.
Yeah, it is. And then for the Bordelais, or the French in general, wine was a big deal. Not that they guzzle it, but it's really part of the culture where you sort of take the time to sit around the table and enjoy the company, family or friends or both, and you enjoy the food, you pair it with wine. And so actually all of my recipes, even a few of the dessert recipes, have wine pairings. So I'm very proud of that part of the book, because that took me a lot. You know, I kept thinking, okay, I'm almost done. And then I'm thinking, oh no, wait, but I have to do, the wine pairings for this or whatever. So, anyway, there's a lot in the book there about, all these different aspects that I learned, about while I was in France. And really, I think anyone, if they're passionate enough about the culture that they're in at the moment as a Foreign Service spouse, they can really dive in and just talk to people, ask people. And in Bordeaux, we didn't have a lot of embassy support. We did sort of, but, it's embassy Paris, they're far away, they're busy with visits. So we were on our own, but actually we preferred that because we could kind of define things the way we wanted to. Anyway, that was, one way to get into the culture was just to not have that extreme support like we had in Moscow, where we were all living in a fishbowl at the embassy on the compound. But I encourage people to really, just go out to the markets, make friends with local people. They'll just shine if you ask them anything about their culture, or especially the food, like we were saying.
Yeah, food is a really great bridge builder, right? I mean, what better way to meet new people and learn about another culture than through food? I mean, I am all about it. I have seen Tanya's book, and it is a massive work of art. How many recipes are in your book, and how long did it take you to actually, from the time you thought about doing this book to the time it was actually finished? It seems like it would have taken a decent amount of time.
Yeah. Well, it took about 5 years. I'd say from, 2013 for the sort of ideas to start coming together and to actually take action on taking cooking courses and recording all of that, to 2018 when it was published. There's something like 200 recipes in there. Some of them are a little bit hidden in the sidebars or in different sections of the book, because it's broken down by meat type, so veal, beef, poultry, etc. But also I have chapters on, I did a butchery apprenticeship. I mean, this is the thing. You can just go somewhere, at least I was able to ask a butcher for recipes and then say, hey, can I intern with you? So I did that for 3 months and just apprenticed, basically.
So you were back in the butcher shop in Bordeaux, like with a big meat cleaver in your hand, like chopping bits of cow? Like, is that?
Well, I didn't use the cleaver, but I did have to wear mesh gloves. And I did have to sign some papers, and they had to get, an okay from the local authorities. But I was able to be behind the counter, serve, serve people and learn literally how to make the sausage.
Wow.
So, yeah. So.
And I love that, because, I think so many of us in modern life are so disassociated from where our food comes from. I mean, we don't see the animal. We don't see where it's raised. We don't see anything about anything. It's just, it comes and it's a little piece of meat in a plastic package at the supermarket, right? And we don't think too much about, you know, where is my meat coming from? Where are my eggs coming from? And I think that's a really wonderful experience that you've had, that really get close to the source of where our food comes from, and you know, and how people prepare it. And I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily go and work at a butcher shop, but I think you must learn a whole bunch, because to be honest, I don't even know the different parts of the meat. My husband knows all those things about the different cuts and all of those kinds of things and how you cook them. And I mean, there's so, it's so vast and rich, the knowledge that you can get from people who work every day in that field, right?
Absolutely. And actually, I'll just tell you that part of my health journey was that when I was 25, or a few years in my early 20s, I was vegetarian and ended up becoming very malnourished. And I had a ruptured appendix. I was living in Kazakhstan at the time, because I also did Russian studies. I did sort of French and Russian. And so I was over in Kazakhstan, you know, in sort of the wild west days of it was the wild east, though, of Central Asia. And I was, you know, at the markets, they had pigs' heads hanging from hooks and the flies swirling. It wasn't something that I was really, it just turned me off to food and to meat. And I had been, you know, gone kind of vegetarian in college because I didn't know how to prepare meat. And so in my book, what I've tried to do is for each meat section, so let's say for beef, I have, I had an artist from Bordeaux draw for me a nice antique style, you know, beef cuts, and then numbered the, you know, the diagram of the cow. And then below, I have a table of the French and English versions of each cut of meat. And the thing about having been a vegetarian is, you know, I was squeamish. Most people are squeamish. You know, they don't want to hurt animals. And, you know, I understand all of that. But in the end, we evolved eating meat. And I think today's, you know, meatless craze is just is leading people down a malnourished path. And so I'm trying to, you know, with the book, trying to demystify, you know, I have, for example, like I'll show how to tie a roast, you know, a step-by-step with pictures, all that I took painstakingly with the self-timer and all this stuff. So I've put a lot into the book so that kind of to demystify a little bit, because for me, it was also a mystery. I didn't know how to cook, and it's actually really easy. Apply heat. But,
I don't know. I think if I did that, I might burn stuff. But I think what's really interesting too about your journey is that you are, I don't know what the right word would be, but maybe like trumpeting ideas that, you know, are not super common. So for example, the fats that you're talking about, right? Like lard and tallow and all this stuff, people just don't cook with that kind of stuff, right? And I think there is a place where, you know, back in ancestral traditions, like they used every bit of the animal, and there's a whole history and tradition of, you know, the uses that you can make of the different parts of the animal when you're cooking, which is really fascinating. And I think part of your book, I think that's different than a lot of other cookbooks out there. You know, they're not just, just put a little olive oil and, you know, call it a day kind of thing. It's like, you know, you use lots of different ingredients, and especially the animal fats, I think is a unique piece about your particular recipes.
Yes, for sure. For sure. And they are the most nutrient dense. Our body recognizes them. I don't think our bodies recognize processed, you know, soybean oil. It's just like inflammatory. What is that? Technically it's a polyunsaturated fat, which means it can oxidize easily. Polyunsaturated, so meaning saturated by oxygen. So yet we're always down, talking down on saturated fat, which is saturated, so it can't oxidize. It has a high smoke point. You know, it's, so you were talking about burning food. It's harder to burn food when you're using tallow. In fact, McDonald's did their French fries in tallow in the 70s until the racket.
There's that anti-fat craze. Yeah.
Yes. And this sort of, I don't know, a processed oil racket kind of got into the mix and said, well, this is cheap and, you know, easy. It's odorless. It's tasteless. So chefs around the world use processed seed oils. So I'm sorry to tell you, but if you go out to a restaurant, they're going to be using vegetable oils. So vegetable seed oils, not tallow. However, tallow, I mean, tallow is so, it has a long shelf life. It's easy to use. It's solid at room temperature. You know, lard is easy to use. We get it out of our bacon. If, you know, it's easy to have on hand and cook with. And actually, we were posted after Bordeaux. We went to Bern, Switzerland, where I was writing the book in a very quiet, you know, Swiss suburb where nobody was bothering me. And that's how I was able to really write the rest of the book.
Nice.
While I was, you know, writing, I was also experimenting with tallow and for lip balm. And I ended up, you know, because you can, in the past they used, and some cultures still do, you know, duck fat or lard or tallow for skin care. It's a nice fat. And actually, especially tallow, which comes from the cow, has a similar fatty acid profile to our own skin. So when we put it on, it's literally nourishing your skin. So over in 2019 to 2020, I was developing some little formulas of lip balms and creams and that kind of thing, which I ended up, you know, and these are from animal fats, but I also add shea butter, cocoa butter, you know, olive oil, depending on what my goal was for the end product. But I ended up, when we moved back to the U.S. in 2019, I started developing these products and launched, actually during COVID, my little Etsy store, the Bordeaux Kitchen Naturals products, using grass-fed tallow and lard soaps and tallow for face cream. And it sounds weird, maybe, but it's so effective. So, for example, I'll have a balm that has a mix of beeswax, shea butter, and tallow, and then maybe a few other oils, and then some essential oils. And people have used these products, you know, on their skin and lips, and they love it. And so I keep making it because it's really the best thing that I've found for my skin, and for, you know, my family uses it, my relatives in Germany, my friends in France. Everybody likes it. So anyway, that's something that's also come out of the book, which was maybe unexpected, but exciting. You know, so now that I'm in the US, that I can run an Etsy store, it was a little harder to do something like that overseas. But everyone has to get posted to DC at some point. And so that's a chance to, you know, do something like a home-based business.
Exactly. Embrace your entrepreneurial self. And yeah. Tanya is not paying me to say this, but I have used actually some of her products for, I think it was the organic salve maybe, because, you know, you guys, like when you use lip balm in the winter and like you put it on and you constantly have to put it on all day, like every 2 hours when your lips are still chapped and dry, is awful. This stuff works. It's really, really nice. And like Tanya said, it may sound a little strange, but actually there's no heavy scent. It's like, it's really, really smooth. It's really nice. And it lasts a long time, surprisingly. Like you get a little jar and it lasts forever. Like I felt like, you know, because that, you know, chapstick and all that is, I mean, if you're a chapstick person, sorry, but I felt like they're really high quality products and they're really wonderful. So definitely check out Tanya's Etsy store. And, you know, because again, like you said, it's a, you have these creative ideas and the book spawned more than just the book, which by the way is wonderful and it's in and of itself, right? I mean, the book is amazing. It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
But then there's this spinoff of like, you've got your shop now and there's all kinds of really wonderful things. I'd actually really like to try the bug repellent one because bugs love me in, you know, DC. in the summertime. They're just eating me alive. But so can I ask, do you hand make this in like your kitchen? How are you producing all of this stuff? And what's the demand like? And what was it like putting up an Etsy store? Because I feel like a lot of people have an idea to do this to sell products. How difficult was it for you? And how did you figure out pricing? And, you know, tell us a little bit about that part of sort of the more practical nuts and bolts of it.
Okay. And if I forget a nut or a bolt, just remind me.
No worries.
So let's see where to begin. I mean, I basically dove into my network. Someone I had met in Paris during, I think it was our first posting. She was a designer. And so I asked her to help me with the design. First, I had to figure out a name. And for me, it was going, you know, it was ended up being a natural to go from the Bordeaux Kitchen book to Bordeaux Kitchen Naturals, because it's, you know, it's wordy and long, but it just was this natural progression, I guess, you know, from what I had learned in the book. And then, so that's what I called it. And I had this friend, Roberta, who lives in, you know, San Francisco, help me design sort of the design that you see now, which we actually used the same font from the book cover. And, you know, what I did first, I guess, was we had arrived in the fall of 2019, and then in early 2020, before all the COVID mania, I had a birthday party, and I invited friends of mine to just tell me which designs they liked best. And you know, being in the DC area, you know, you have lots of friends from everywhere who happen to be here. So I was able to invite, you know, I don't know, 10 or 12 women, and they came over and told me what they thought. And they each got a little, I don't know, I think a little sample, something of kind of the demo versions. And then
product research, right? I mean, you gotta, you know, people have to interact with the product, use it, and see if it's something that they might want to purchase. So
And the you know, what the brand looked like, mm-hmm. and the name of the brand, because first I thought of some other names with a B in it or whatever, or lavender on the, you know, logo. And so it sort of evolved back and forth. And in terms of pricing, I looked actually at Etsy. So to start an Etsy store, it's not really that hard. You kind of create an account, and then the thing is that I take my own product photos. So I found a style that I liked, which is not so dissimilar from the book. And I would take photos of my products, upload them, and, you know, you have to do a whole description of the ingredients in order of, you know, how many percentages roughly is in each thing. I try to be as close to the industry standards as possible in terms of describing my creams and soaps. But so yeah, I make them in the kitchen, and I've taken over half the living room in the house for my office. And, you know, we live in Falls Church, and the real estate is pretty limited here. And so if I had more space, I would have, you know, I would get it, you know, if I had my wishes, I would have a big office with lots of, you know, all the boxes and supplies and containers, on hand. But I sort of have that surrounding me in the living room. And then the soaps I make outside, because of the lime that is used to turn the soap into, you know, from sort of fatty acids into a base. Soap is basic, and so that's about as sciencey as I get on it. But I do it outside, and in you know, cookers. I do the hot process. There's a cold process too, which. Using lard and lye, you use a hot process. you know, there are soaps that are olive oil only, and then that's a whole different process. But I use lard and then olive oil and coconut oil in all my soaps, lard or tallow, or bacon fat, actually.
So hang on. I'm imagining you outside in your garden in Falls Church, which I've been to her house, by the way, just FYI. And you're sitting there with cookers? I mean, are you doing this in the middle of winter? Because I would imagine when you run a store, it's not like you're like, oh, yeah, sorry, it's 30 degrees outside. Like, I'm just not going to make any soap today. I mean, like, how do you do that stuff?
Okay, so we have the terrace outside, and that's kind of my desk. When I can, if it's not too hot or too cold, that's where I sit, just for writing. But I also, I put out, some cover for the table, and I put my cookers out there for the soaps, and they just, you know, cook away. It's actually quite time consuming. It's hard, you know, if we talk about pricing, the soaps, if I counted how much time it took me to, you know, stir and weigh and measure and pour and all of that stuff, and then cut the soaps and mix all the things inside them and the essential oils, I mean, they're really underpriced. But it's hard to sell people more than, you know, a $9 bar of soap. I mean, it sounds like a lot. So pricing is hard. But what I did was I would go on Etsy and find similar handmade products, because Etsy started for artisans, really, for people making things by hand. Now it sells, I think, more machine-made things. But it's, you know, there are a lot of people selling different things, and there are some tallow-based people who already are into this world of using tallow and lard and even goose fat, you know, for face creams, etc. So I just compared prices of the kind of products that I was making and priced it, you know, to value my time highly based on, you know, the master's degree that I had to pay for 20 years ago or whatever, then these would be high, high luxury items. But I've priced them in such a way that they're accessible to people, yet still also, you know, I'm able to pay back what I've, the materials, and also have a little bit left over so that I can, basically, I just put it back into the business. Anything that I make, but so it's hard to make a living. If I could find at some point an assistant and more customers, and you know, my goal is a sale a day. Right now, I think you were asking about this. My sales are, you know, mostly on the weekends. I'll have a couple of sales. Sometimes during the week, one or two will pop up. Then Christmas and Mother's Day are kind of big, the holiday times help. But it's really hard because it's not even for the book. I mean, people have to know me in order to find the book or the product, or, you know, it's basically word of mouth, since I don't really advertise. So there are a lot of challenges, but it is fun, and it's your own thing. So it's my own project. And so I, as you know, with your podcast, if it's your own project, then you're willing to put in what it takes to make
it. Exactly. The time and energy and love and nurturing and care that is required to put anything that you make or produce out into the world for other people to use. Right. So completely get that piece. Mm-hmm. And not to be like, wait, but there's more, because not only does Tanya have her cookbook and she has her whole line of like soaps and really wonderful products, but you also actually lead trips right to Europe. Can you tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah. So thanks. So last fall I started a trip to Bordeaux with 7 people. I was the 8th. And yeah, so I was basically what a friend who went on the trip said, that I'm a curator of experiences. So my goal with the tours is to to Bordeaux is to connect this amazing network that I've built up of friends over there with the sort of English-speaking or American friends, let's say, and bringing them together and just showing the amazing things and people that I've learned about in France. And so that's kind of what I did. And I'm planning another tour for September 23rd to 30th of this year, where basically we meet with winemakers and cheesemakers, chocolate makers. We stay in the beautiful UNESCO protected town or village of Saint-Émilion, which is a famous wine appellation as well. And so it's not just about the wine. It's not just about the food. It's about the entire experience and the beauty of that area, and just kind of stepping into the French lifestyle and the Southwest French lifestyle, which is so lovely and unique. And I think it's a unique thing to be able to meet these people that I have come to know personally. I think for those thinking about doing that for a country they love, you know, other EFMs, I encourage that because it's a really a personalized way to show others the country and the people you've come to love. And also this year, I'm taking a group on a hiking tour to Switzerland. Like I said before, we moved from Bordeaux to Bern, and it's Switzerland, and we came to know some of the places around. You know, we were near the Bernese Alps and had the good fortune to discover those a little bit. And so there's a particular valley called the Lötschental where I'll be taking. It's kind of a hidden valley that not less known about, you know, than the big names like Semmeritz and Zermatt or whatever. So it's I'm taking a group just, you know, for food and hiking and the beauty of the Alps, which I found so inspiring there that I want to go back. And this is one way to go back, is to take people along and show them, you know, the beauty and share it. It's the most gratifying thing about all of this, the book, the creams and soaps, the tours, is just being able to, you know, open these worlds to people and share and see how they benefit from it.
I love that so much because I think what you've done is taken a passion of yours and something that you're deeply involved with and have a passion for, and not only open it up so that other people can experience that, but actually you're inviting them in for a journey that you've taken, and you've discovered all of these amazing people along the way, and you're opening up a little piece of your world to share with people. And it's very small and personal. And I mean, I think there's so many things I love about that journey. And I think the book and, you know, your creams and all this is just your way of sharing the things that you're passionate about with the world. And I think that, you know, EFMs and people that are in the Foreign Service do have the ability to do this. And you can decide when you go to someplace, well, I'm just going to wait and rough it out, or, you know, although I don't know about roughing it out in France or Switzerland, because you guys have had some pretty good tours, let's be fair. But I think there's beauty to be found in lots of places. And if you, you know, are open to it and you go out, I mean, there's the world's a big place. And I think your journey is very inspiring. And I think that people will be very interested to know more about it. Where can people find out more about you, Tanya?
Okay, well, the best place would just be www.bordeauxkitchen.com. I have the links to the Etsy store and all the things there, and the tours.
Yes, and it's a wonderful website with Tanya's photography too, which we didn't even touch on. But I mean, you can tell that. I mean, the photographs are just lovely. And honestly, when you're having a bad day, just go look, because I mean, seriously, blue skies and the food there, it's so bright, and there's so many like beautiful contrasts of colors. I mean, you really get a sense of place when you're looking at a lot of these these photos that Tanya sent, and even just the products, like the way that the creams are photographed. Like, I just feel happy looking at the pictures, not even using the cream.
Thank you.
It is an experience, right? This is a tangible, tactile experience that Tanya is bringing to people. And that is part of, you know, her foreign service journey over the last 20 plus years. But Tanya, any last tips for those EFMs out there that are sitting there at some post somewhere thinking, what do I do with my spare time? Anything you want to say to them before we wrap up?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I guess just follow your passion. Maybe just sit with yourself quietly when you can, just shake the guilt, because there's a lot of guilt too if you're not out there producing right away. I found I felt like I had to get a quick freelance job ASAP after moving. So I think just sort of sitting with yourself and thinking, what am I passionate about? What do I love doing? You know, just getting to know yourself a little bit. What is it that really drives you? And there're just millions of possibilities. I think just really asking yourself and just even momentarily letting go of any guilt or shoulds, you know, or what other people's things. Oh, you really should do this since you're in that country. Just kind of lose all of that and just think about what is your essence. That might help, and that might be a little hard too. So something else that I love to do is write, and I would just say, journal. It's very therapeutic. Journal, just write out your thoughts, dump them out every morning in a nice journal with a nice pen. That's a very cathartic experience in itself and can help you just get in touch with your thoughts and your passions. So I think that would be my advice.
Wonderful advice. Well, Tanya, thank you so much for being on the show, and best of luck with all of your various entrepreneurial and business ideas. And, you know, I think what you're offering to the world is just really wonderful. And I hope some people check you out and experience some of the flavors and wonderful things that you've seen in your life. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Tanya.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.